Okay, this hour, we'll take your phone calls, your stories with Dr. Judith Orloff as we talk about death, the ecstasy of surrender, next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Judith Orloff with us. We'll take your calls as well as we talk about death and dying. What would you say might be the first step to leaving this so-called zone of fear?
Well, the first step is to really identify what your fears are so you can be clear. Now, is it losing somebody? Is it leaving your loved ones behind? Is it pain? Is it the illness you're afraid of, not the actual passage? Is it leaving something undone? Is it that something horrible will happen to you on the other side, or that you'll be obliterated and there won't be you anymore? Or is it that there's nothing over there? You know, begin to look at your fears so that you can really identify them with them, and then be willing to surrender and to let go some of these fears as you explore what death really is, either through the death meditation that I presented in the book or talking to others who have experienced death. But letting go enough of your linear mind so that you can begin to be willing to accept there's something else over there, and that you don't die, and that the spirit lives on.
Judith, since you've been doing this, and you've been doing it for a number of years, you've worked with Stephen Schwartz and some of the things that he has done, working as a remote viewer. Where do we head with all of this? I mean, are you going to get the masses interested in learning more about the other side, or what? What happens?
Well, I think the masses are interested in what happens in the other side. I mean, they're acutely interested. And they did a Time magazine poll of how many people believe in heaven, and it was some outrageously large amount. Now, that people believe in heaven, whatever that is for others, but the idea of remote viewing and that you're able to move through time and space with consciousness, that's a little bit hard for a lot of the scientific community to accept. But I think, you know, as I'm traveling around on this book tour, and I'm talking about remote viewing as a way to read people, because I use it with patients all the time, and people are really open to it a little bit more, a lot more actually, than they were, let's say, a decade ago. And I think Stephen's work and Russell Targ's work, you know, and so many of the pioneers in remote viewing have done so much to change, you know, the public opinion about remote viewing. And, you know, in this book, The Ecstasy of Surrender, there's a chapter on the art of reading people. And one of the techniques is learning how to do remote viewing. And as Russell Targ proved in his research at SRI, that even college students could learn to do remote viewing when they had no previous psychic experiences of any kind. And I personally use remote viewing in my psychiatric work just by tuning in to patients before I actually see them, so I can do a remote viewing on them to see if we could work well together. And if you're interested in reading people, and remote viewing is so essential to learn, so you can really, you know, go through time and space and get who someone is without even having met them, just by focusing in on their name and really sensing death and what that is, that's the ultimate remote viewing experience, because you're projecting yourself beyond time and space into another level of consciousness that you can't get to with your mind.
Not at all.
So, you know, it depends if you want to expand your awareness in these ways. And I know so many people are curious to do this, but you have to let go to do it. I know with my initial interviews with Stephen, when I was being trained as a remote viewer, you know, he talked me, you know, over my fears, you know, and talked me out of my fears so they wouldn't stop me. I had so many fears about what would this mean to me as a psychiatrist? How did it go against my traditional training? You know, I had a whole long list of them. And Stephen walked me through my fears so I could be more neutral in the remote viewing itself. But remote viewing is an exploration of consciousness, and death is an exploration of consciousness. And as the Dalai Lama said about, what do you think about your own death? And he said, just a change of clothing, you know, and smiles.
Simple as that. Let's take some calls here. Let's go to Tracy in Austin, Texas. Hey, Trace, go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
We sure can.
Hi, I'm just a local yokel musician in Austin, Texas, and I was driving home from listening to some wonderful live music, and just tuned, you know, punched on my radio and Stevie Ray Vaughan's Life Without You came on, and I moved to Austin because of Stevie. I'm a guitarist, and so that hit me because I just lost my father on February 9th. And then we stopped at the 7-Eleven, and I tuned back in after we got done with that, and I was driving home, and just happened upon this station that my best friend listens to all the time with George Norrie and Judith, which is my middle name, speaking. And what you were speaking, it could be, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but these could be words coming out of my mouth. I mean, since I was a child, I've been, you know, had premonitions and visions and all sorts of things. And I just caught, like when you were talking about the Ouija board and some, just a few things here and there and death and not to be fearful of it. And I wanted so much to be with my father and was with him as much as I could be in his final moments. And the Ouija board thing, I mean, anything can come in, and and if you open that channel, anything can come in. And if you are born with that open channel, like I might take the liberty to say that you are, or I am, or some people are, anything can come in, and you really have to learn. I've had to train myself to learn that I'm a kind of a conduit and a messenger type of, anything can come in, and you have to have the power to, you know, if you wish for the good things and not the dark, to channel the dark energies, you have to take that into your own power and really work that. And thanks for taking my call. And I don't even know what type of physician you are.
She's a psychiatrist, Tracy, and a darn good one. But synchronicities are all over the place in abundance, aren't they, Judith?
Oh, they are. And I'm so glad you tuned in. It was the perfect thing for you to hear, actually, at this moment. And your wisdom about not surrendering to the dark energies of the Ouija board, especially if you're a channel. I mean, I'm so happy to hear that you're clear about that, and that you tuned in, you know, at a time very close to your father's passing. It's very synchronistic, and I hope what we were talking about helped you.
Judith, when people come to you for assistance, what do they want to know? What are they after?
Well, what they want is to be able to be happy, basically. And they want to expand their levels of awareness because they're kind of growing tired with the way that they're dealing with things. And they're not surrendering. You know, part of my work, you know, with the ecstasy of surrender is teaching my patients to be able to let go a little bit. As we force and we push and we try so hard and we don't listen to our intuition and stay stuck in our heads. And that's why they come, because they're in pain from that. And that could manifest as depression, anxiety, relationship problems, illness. And what they want so much is to expand their consciousness and to be able to know things that could bring them comfort and to be able to listen to their inner voice and open up to a spiritual reality and not just stay stuck in the material world. And, you know, the psychiatrist is really, by definition, a doctor of the soul. You know, and it's just such a travesty that, you know, so much of psychiatry has drifted from even one-to-one therapy with patients, you know, that the patients come to me who don't want to go to traditional psychiatrists because they want to expand into the spiritual. And it's often very hard for conventional psychiatrists to hold enough space for that or to understand that. So, you know, they come to me also because they want to develop intuition, which is key to living life.
Let's go to La Quinta, California. Jeff's turn on Coast to Coast on the Wild Card line. Jeff, you're on with Judy. Go ahead.
Hey, fantastic, George. I'm listening to your show. I finally talked my mom into stand up late enough. She's going to be 84.
Good for her.
And, you know, and I take care of her. And I sense from time to time where you just see that look in the eye, that, you know, my time is short and what's going to get me, and will it be, you know, will I die in my bed, or am I going to, these type of thoughts. And then, you know, depressing thoughts come over. My mom is a very happy person, and for 84, she's extremely healthy, and it's all positive. Now, from my end of it, I'm not overly religious. I just know there is a God, and I know there is a afterlife, and I have faith in that. My question is that when you, because I have so many friends and family that have passed away. I mean, if the truth is, I'm going to have a lot of people there at the gate. And that's one of the more beautiful things is to close your eyes at night and know that you have more than better odds of living, you know, the mm-hmm. Ten Commandments, et cetera. I mean, but my question is, when you get there, is there reincarnation? Are you able to advance? Or is it like the 19th hole of the golf course and everybody's just excited that they got through the round, you know? And that's my curiosity, is the expansion of knowledge or the expansion of the soul when you get to heaven. Is that a continuing process, or is this the kind of final process and then we make it to the next dimension?
Well, you know, my feeling about that, you know, working with patients in therapy is that the soul expansion begins here, and that the soul work is on earth, and that by being a good person, and, you know, your mother is such an incredibly good person, and, you know, by having belief and faith and doing good works and, you know, really opening your heart here, that primes the way to your passage. And the development that you take here of your soul, you take with you when you leave here. And that's the primary gift of this life. It's not what you accumulate. It's not anything external. It's how you develop your own heart and your own soul and spirit. And then when you go to the other side, my feeling is it just continues on and it expands. And there's so many dimensions that are possible. And you want to keep going up. You don't want to go down. And so you want to, like, there's a life review at the end. Now, many people who have had near-death experiences, you know, have reported the life review where in a second you go through every act you've ever done, you know, positive, negative, indifferent, and you evaluate, you're accountable. And that somehow speaks to the alchemy of the soul and your own development and where you go from here and what you need to work on. And, yes, I think the doors of heaven are open to everybody.
Judith, when people die in their sleep, I mean, are they I assume they're aware that they've died somehow in the other side, right?
Yeah, that's the way I hope I go. I want to go in my dreams because I've always been more comfortable in the dream realm than awake. But a lot of people don't want to go in their dreams. They want to be awake and aware of the mind.
They want to know what's going on, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they want to know, and they want to be awake and aware and make the transition, eyes open. So it just depends on your preference, really. I think going in the dream world is a very beautiful thing. And, you know, when those on the other side come to visit us, it's often in dreams because I think it's easier for them to materialize and make themselves known in dreams as opposed to when we're awake. We have less defenses. But I think, like you said before, the dream realm and death, there's some similarities there of frequency, you know, that are very harmonious with one another. And so, no, I think dreaming is a beautiful way to go. I mean, you know, the Native traditions believe that dreaming is more real than this realm, you know, as I do, actually. I've always felt that since I've been little.
All right, let's go east. Steve is in Greenville, Tennessee. Welcome to the show, Stephen. Go ahead.
Yes, my wife just passed away this past Friday, and I just like some reassurance that she's in heaven and happy.
Yes, have you felt this person?
What was that?
Have you felt this person?
Felt
since the passing? Have you felt any presences, or have you?
No, I have not felt her presence.
Okay, well, what you can do is just before you go to sleep at night, ask for a dream and for a visitation, so the person can tell you directly they're all right. I mean, I can tell you they're fine.
Yes.
But you, I think it's so much more convincing if they could come and tell you themselves.
Okay.
Judith, when we get stories of people making phone calls from the other side.
Oh, yes.
What the heck is happening? How does that happen?
Trying to communicate, you know, and also virtual communication. It's not only phone calls. You know, I've heard of ghosts coming through computers and text and all kinds of things. So, you know, they just come through the airwaves, however they could get through, wherever the least amount of obstacles are.
Cheryl is in Wisconsin. Hey, Cheryl, go ahead.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, oh, thank you so much for talking about this subject. I always enjoy hearing these type of shows. I work at a hospice, and so I see a lot of things that go on, and I agree with your guest tonight, you know, on a lot of things that she is talking about.
Well, okay, very good. There's another reaffirmation in what you do, Judith.
Yes, and bless you for being a hospice worker. You know, you are on the front lines, and you are there right with the dying.
That's not easy.
No, it's not easy, and I have the deepest respect for you.
Mark in St. Peter's, Missouri. Hi, Mark. Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hello, George. Hello, Dr. Orliff. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi.
So 11 years ago, I was involved in a very bad motorcycle accident, and I believe I had a near-death experience, and it kind of changed my life. It changed my whole outlook on death. I tell people I'm not afraid of death because I feel as though I've been there already. Now, my wife is a critical care nurse, a trauma nurse, and this has caused some problems between the both of us because she says that, you know, she sees death every day, and people sometimes give up on themselves and they die. And I tell her, I tell my daughter, I don't want to leave this world, but I'm not afraid of dying. And my wife is, on the other hand, saying, you should always fight until the very end. So what's your take on that, doctor?
I think your wife loves you very much. That's my feeling. And that she doesn't really want to lose you, and that she can fight to the very end if that's what she wants. But it's not really a fight. It's death is part of the cycles of light. You continue on. And I think to fight it and to stay alive when it's not your time anymore, there comes a grace in letting go. I mean, that's what, you know, I was trying to communicate in my book, that it, there comes a time
you must
let go.
Even, you know, when it's obvious, there's nothing left, right?
Yeah. Yeah, even when there's nothing left. I mean, my mother really didn't want to go when she was about to die, and she had a dream that her parents who had passed on came to get her, to take her to the other side, and her nurse heard her saying, go away, stay away from me, stay away from me, I don't want to go over there. And so she fought it to the very end, and I helped her over with the meditation when she was in coma, but I understand, and which worked, and she went to the other side, you know, peacefully, but I think there comes a time, and with your wife too, as much as she wants to fight and hold on to life and she loves life, she won't be able to do that indefinitely. And it's, death is not a failure. It's a natural transition of the human spirit. So I hope she might want to open up to that a little bit.
Judith, we're going to come back with you and take some final phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Beyond Belief, that's our television program available for you to watch. It's 10 days free, and you can download and look at all the other videos available. Simply go to the website, beyondbelief.com, fill out the information, and you'll see all kinds of incredible shows. Beyondbelief.com. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Judith Orloff with us. We'll get to your calls in a second. Judith, in your career, what story, what episode has just stuck with you?
Well, I think the episode that has stuck with me was when I first opened up my practice and I was not trusting my intuition, I had a premonition about one of my patients who I was treating for depression that she would make a suicide attempt. And it was a crystal clear premonition. It just came through, you know, as clear as any kind of premonition would. And because I wasn't trusting my intuition at that point, I did not listen. And so what happened was within a few weeks, this woman overdosed on the antidepressants that I was prescribing for you and ended up in coma for about 3 years. Excuse me, it felt like 3 years, about 3 weeks.
Some people do it for 3 years, longer.
Yeah, it's true. But for about 3 weeks in the hospital, and second sight, I talk about this, where this was really the turning point in my career, where I had to reevaluate as a physician how I was going to trust my intuition with patients when I was taught in medical school never to rely on anything but the linear mind. So that was a huge surrender for me, was that I was faced with trusting intuition, going beyond the realms of traditional medicine, and also dealing with my fear of what my peers would think about that. And so, and that was the healing process I talked about in Second Sight, which was hugely important for me as a turning point in my career.
All right, let's go back to the phones. First-time caller Joe in San Diego, welcome to the program. Actually, it's in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi. You have a fabulous show, and yes, Judith, it's an honor to speak to you tonight.
Thank you.
Oh, sure. I just wanted to share with yourself and George that I had a friend that died of pancreatic cancer about a year ago. She was a coworker, and I had found out that she hadn't been at work for like something like 4 months. So my wife and I set out to look for her because we were very close friends in all the years that I had been working with her. And come to find out, when I called a certain hospital, she was listed there. So I told my wife, we've got to go. This is, you know, more than a friend. She's almost like a sister. So as we walked into the room, she's in fetal position on her bed, and her sister, her son, her father, and her sister-in-law were there. And she turns around and, you know, sees me coming in. And she turns around and says, and she's thin as a rail. And she says, Joey, she says, they say I'm dying. And I'm very receptive to people that and their energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I could pick up that she was very low on energy. Her spirit just wasn't what it used to be. So I went over there right away. And thank God I have the loving wife that I do, because I didn't have to hold back. I went and got in that hospital bed with her, and I held her. And she curled up to me as if she was like my baby. And she said, Joey, I'm dying. I'm scared. They say I have this cancer. I'm in stage 4. And I said, well, Brenda, what else did they tell you? And she went on and on and on and on. And I listened. I didn't interrupt. And I told her, well, listen, Brenda, I said, what we need to do is listen to what the doctors are saying, do what the doctors are saying, but there's also another thing is we have to wait on the ultimate result, you know, on the ultimate result, and that is what Jesus Christ is. And then so from there on, without getting into the Bible and, you know, scriptures and so on and so forth, I came to find out that it was time for her to go home about a week later. And I found out that none of her family wanted her going home because they didn't want her dying at home. Mind you, these are people with, you know, immaculate homes. You see their homes in house and gardens and so on and so forth. And I live in a modest home.
Yeah.
I don't live in a home to where I have more than I need. I have exactly what I need.
What I need, and that's it.
Yes, sir. And the funny part was, we had just moved back to San Antonio from Rockport, Texas, and our living room was empty. And I told her, well, Brenda, what are they going to do with you? And she said, well, I'm going to end. They're putting me in a nursing home, Joe. And see, she has a very young spirit. She is always the first one ready to go and the life of the party. And she just wasn't herself. She wasn't in her.
You can't blame her.
Yes, I just felt so bad and so lost for her. And so we came home, my wife and I, and we spoke about it. And well, when we went back to the hospital, we spoke to her and told her, listen, Brenda, we just moved back to our home, and our living room is totally empty. I said, listen, how would you like it if instead of going to a hospice, you came to live in our home, and we would not charge you a dime in rent? The only thing we would ask you to do is to supply your bed and all your medication and whatever food you're going to eat.
If it's special,
That's an incredible story, and I think exactly what you're describing is what we need to do with others who are in that position and open up our homes and our hearts to them. I really commend you for that.
So did she take you up on the offer there, Joe?
Yes, George. In fact, Judith, I was going to say, I was very fortunate to have a wife that's willing to have another woman, you know, come into my home, you know, she had been my friend for many, many years before my wife met her. So she got her stuff situated here in the living room. And George and Judith, there were days that I was here in the living room, and we'd talk all night. And there were nights that my wife and I have this humongous, gigantic, you know, sized bed.
Yeah.
And she'd fall asleep on my wife's chest all night long, and I'd sleep in the living room. Or she'd sleep in the living room on my chest. And we had many, many talks. And one of the things that she told me was that she said, Joey, I'm scared. I'm very scared to die. I'm terrified, Joe. She said, they said I'm going to die, and I'm just so scared. And so I told her, look, Brenda, they might say that you're going to die, and, you know, and they might be telling you so on and so forth, but we're all dying each and every day.
Yes, that's exactly
right. Did she, Joe, let me ask you quickly now, did she succumb in the house? Did she die there?
Needless to say, she ended no, she didn't die here at home.
But she did die.
Yes, she did. In fact, George, they had only given her 6 weeks to live, and I could feel, Judith, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but I could feel her draining. You know, I could feel my energy being drained by her.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a day after Thanksgiving, and she got very, very sick. And I told her sister, who's a very loving person, her name is Arlene. I said, Arlene, I can't do it, because this was an 89-year-old, she was an 89-pound girl taking...
Well, but what you did as much as you could. I got to tell you, Judith, he's a saint.
He's a saint, and he's such a good model for what we can do. And the fact in the beginning of your story, when you crawled into her bed with her and you held her, and that you weren't afraid of her illness or her death, I mean, that's really extraordinary. You know, I think you can be the model for all of us, but what's so clear to me is that you don't have a fear of death or illness,
no.
Really, that you were able to embrace this and help her in her journey of illness
And they did as much as they could. So,
absolutely.
And off she went. Falls, Idaho, Kathy's with us. Go ahead, Kath. Thanks for calling.
Hi, George and Dr. Orloff.
Hi, Kathy.
Great to talk with you. Hi, I'm enjoying your program, and it's so synchronistic, as George would say, because I just returned home from seeing the film Heaven is for Real for the second time, and I was just really taken by the power of prayer that's shown in that movie for people who are near death. In this case, it was a little four-year-old boy.
A little boy. We had his father on the air.
Yes. Well, and the movie shows the actuality of heaven and the absolute love, the omniscience, omnipotence, and omnipresence of Jesus. And I'm a practicing Christian, so that's my viewpoint. But also, I was also taken by the, I guess you'd call it synchronicity in the book, too, of Akiana and her beautiful face of Jesus that she painted as a very young girl, and that was in the movie. So I just wondered what Dr. Orloff's take is on that movie, if you've seen it.
No, I haven't, but it sounds incredible.
You've got to go see it, Judith.
I will, definitely. Thank you for telling me about it.
It was an incredible story. It turned out to be a best-selling book. And there's just so much out there. It's just strange how
these things happen. But you know, in terms of art and premonitions, No, I've heard of stories like that throughout the ages, how, you know, children are painting these sand paintings or oil paintings of Jesus or the saints or whoever. I mean, it just comes through. No, the presence is there, and that's what the surrender is to those kinds of spirits, the positive, loving ones. So you could bring those spirits into your life and be open to the premonitions and visions that can happen.
Let's go to San Diego now. Bob's with us west of the Rockies. Bob, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Good evening, George and Judith.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a little different take on it. I have no fear of death. I've done it many a times, but I have a fear that, you know, I believe in incarnation and reincarnation, and this happens to be reincarnated lifetime for me. I had a fear of, which was stopping my progress, of how viciously I was axed to death. About about 2 to 3 lifetimes ago.
Yes.
But I think that's really relevant. I mean, I had a fear when I first came out with my book, Second Sight, about speaking in public for fear I would be shot. And I'm sure that that was from past lives of healers being shot and burned and tortured. And, you know, so many women and men who have stood up with their visions have had these horrible things happen. And I became very clear when I began to go out and speak in public when the book came out that it was safe now in order to speak out. And so whatever fear you have of that past life, I mean, Brian Weiss has done such great work with past lives, might be worth to reinvestigate with a guide in order to heal and let go of that.
It's interesting how in reincarnation, if you have like a birthmark, the chances are you'll have a birthmark in your other life too.
Right, absolutely, that our patterns continue. And I do believe in reincarnation and many lives, and I think it's a very compassionate system in that we get to work through our issues for as long as time as we need it, over many centuries and eons, and the new souls or the young souls, you know, gain a certain depth and become older souls, you know, with the knowledge of various lives. But, you know, all this, you know, I want to tie it up with the whole concept of surrender and letting go. I mean, what I'm so struck by your callers is the open-mindedness and how much they're not stuck in the traditional Western paradigm and just the ability to explore all this. That's what surrender is. And I'm really, really heartened by, you know, this whole show and the conversation we've had with all the callers.
Oh, they keep coming. Andy is truck driving in Texas, wild card line. Andy, you're up with us.
Hey, George, love the show, man.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Judith, I had two questions for you. One is, my mother passed 4 years ago, and I've heard on previous shows years and years where you ask, I asked my mom, you know, before she died to come visit me in my dreams. And in that 4 years, I've only had one dream of her, and it was just kind of a standard dream, you know, just her being there. So I really had no closure on that. The second question had to do with the Ouija board and spirits. You said that you could open yourself up to bad spirits. In your research, have you come to a conclusion to whether those spirits are human spirits or are they demonic spirits or something of another plane?
And I think you can have the whole range of possibility. It isn't human because they're on the other side. But it could be the whole range from just impish spirits who are causing trouble. And there are lots of those out there, and they can really wreak havoc, you know, to dark or demonic spirits and everything in between. So I would not suggest doing it. People do it out of curiosity, but I would not suggest doing that. You're asking for trouble. You don't want to invite the dark into your life, and you're doing that with a Ouija board, maybe unintentionally. But you don't want to open yourself up to that. You have to protect yourself. You know, we've had shows before on energy vampires, which I've written about. You know, people who can suck you dry. But if you think people can suck you dry, just think how the spirit world can in terms of some of the forces you can encounter.
They can't wait. It's almost like they thrive on it.
They thrive on it, but if the human opens themselves up, a human being opens themselves up to it, that's an open invitation to come in, and you don't want to do that.
Mark in Asheville, North Carolina. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Good morning, George, Dr. Orloff. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Had a quick question, and this is really an opinion on Dr. Orloff's part, but I was wondering if she thinks that the people that do commit suicide, I had a friend in 1968 that committed suicide, and my son 5 years ago committed suicide, and I was wondering if she thinks that on the other side that these people have any kind of camaraderie or any kind of, if they know each other and communicate with each other, does that make any sense?
That's a really fascinating question. I'm not sure. I think if karmically they were meant to learn from one another, they would. But what I do know for certain is that they will go to the light eventually, and that there's no moral judgment on it, at least from my point of view. And it's just about a difficult journey reaching the light. But in terms of the camaraderie of others who followed similar paths, I don't know, but it would make sense in terms of love that that would happen so they could learn from one another.
By going into the light, are you guaranteeing your own death?
I think it is guaranteed for us that is our destination.
Just not sooner
and that
than
is
later,
our,
huh?
Yeah, sooner or later, that's our final surrender. And that's how I end the book, with that: joyously, ecstatically, hopefully, without fear.
So if you're not afraid of dying, you don't have to push it. No sense rushing it, right?
No. A lot of times when people, you know, get a hint of what happens, they want to go now. And that's not the point either. It's to bring that sense of heaven back to everyday life and share it with this world that's suffering so much and going through so much turmoil.
All right, Judith, thank you for being on the program. Dr. Judith Orloff, her book, The Ecstasy of Surrender. Her website, drjudithorloff.com, is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. When we come back in just a moment, we're going to talk about years and years of exploitation, manipulation, about the beliefs of UFOs and ET visitations. That'll be next on Coast to Coast AM as we go live to the United Kingdom. Don't touch your dial.